From Luminary, this is Here to Slay, the Black, feminist, food-loving, and usually hungry podcast of your dreams. I'm hungry, y'all. I'm also Tressie McMillan Cotton.
I am Roxanne Gay. On Here to Slay, Tressie and I talk about politics and culture, pretty much anything that's getting our attention. It could be book clubs and books like last week, or it could be the trials of being a Black academic like the week before, or it could be about food, glorious food.
Yeah, we touched a nerve with that Black academic one, Roxanne. Mm-hmm. We are still getting messages about that one. We said some things that usually go unsaid, which is part of the problem, but that's what we try to do on this podcast. We say the quiet part out loud. Things that you aren't going to hear anywhere else, you can hear them right here.
And we do it with some help from each other and our wonderful guests, who are women, mostly Black women usually, but always women who are getting shit done.
Hello, my friend.
Hello.
I got to tell you, I can't help but notice I'm a little distracted, Roxanne, because I'm looking over your shoulder. What's that I see back there?
Well,
what'd you do?
Well, one of the things is I got a room partition so that I can Zoom here in my office and hide my little home gym. Uh-huh. But beside that is my Ergotta rower.
It arrived.
It did arrive. And it is a beautiful sculptural thing. It is made out of like some fancy wood. And what I love about this, I've only used it once because I got it yesterday. It's a water rower.
Yeah.
So you can hear the swish of the water.
And then I know, you can isn't
watch,
that cool?
It's so cool. And you can watch these little videos. So like I've been going through this inlet in the Philippines, an oyster farming village. And it's, I mean, the future is hilarious. The future
it really is
truly fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting up off of it, it's quite low to the ground.
Yeah.
And getting up off of it ended up being an adventure. And I sort of injured myself.
Poor baby. When you said something about it, I was like, well, at least you were close to the ground.
You know,
at least you didn't fall from up
that
high.
That was my saving grace, because I sure did, like, weevils wobble and they all fall down.
Fall down.
I weebled, I wobbled, I fell the fuck down.
Oh, you poor baby. Well, I've been known to throw myself off of a machine, so don't even worry about it.
Now we have our little bike, we have our little Ergotta. It's just exciting to finally have a piece of cardio equipment here in New York, because in LA I have my whole setup and it's wonderful and it's familiar. And
yeah,
here I certainly have the stairs, but before there was this elliptical up here that Debbie's ex had given her, and it just didn't sit right with my spirit.
The haunted elliptical wasn't your jam. It's like when you sleep in a bed that somebody else gave them. Like, yeah, it's kind of it's not good. This is not
no,
good.
We still have it, to be clear, because it was I get it. It was a big gift and so on. But it's in the ground level apartment of our building. My cousin uses it.
You outsourced it to a cousin?
I did. My cousin lives downstairs.
Okay.
But, you know, life is slowly getting back to normal here in New York. I'm developing my little workout routine. And we are actually starting to think about going to a restaurant for a meal.
Yeah. Yeah. I know how much people miss this. I didn't make fun of it, but I did. I was a little critical at points during COVID about how much emphasis we were placing on restaurants as opposed to other industries.
Girl, the rhetoric about save your restaurant with a gift card.
It was one of those things where I thought it is so irrational that the only way this makes sense is if it is attached to people's identity. And that's clearly what it is. I say this all the time. There are only two things that people get that emotionally volatile about in public. And that is threats to their safety and threats to their identity. People experience those as just like a violent attack. So when I would say, you know, I just said very casually, it's like, y'all really think, you know, that gift cards are going to save your restaurant. And even if it did save the restaurant, so what? Like, COVID is this rolling at the time, especially this rolling crisis. Why would you save them this month just to have them back in the same position next month? It's fine if it closes. New restaurants will open. Listen, honey, people fell out on me, Roxanne.
I believe
they were like, if I lose the Thai place in my community, the home values will sink. And I was just like, that doesn't even make any sense.
It doesn't. Like,
ridiculous.
I agree. They wedded so much of their identity to living in a place where there's good food.
Uh-huh.
You know, you see that a lot on House Hunters, mutually beloved show, where people are like, Podunk, blah, blah.
It's near the shops.
Yeah, it's walkable. And I'm like, you mean that one block? Yeah.
Yes, I mean, yes. Of course. That's exactly, as a person who has lived in a community that has one cute block that they show in every television show.
Yep.
Like yes, every, they mean one block.
You know, what was required to save the restaurant industry was federal intervention.
That's right.
Because they are the only ones with a checkbook to accommodate the millions of people who work in the restaurant industry.
And that was fundamentally my issue, that the buy gift cards, get takeout, you know, order food whether you want it or not. I'm just ordering the food, even if I don't eat it, people were saying on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I thought, first of all, how American of you. That's gross.
Yes.
Second, there are people like, not to get all mom on you, but there are people starving. That's gross to get on the internet and say. And then the other thing, though, was that it does that thing that I, of course, hate, which is it takes this really big, complex, structural problem and then says, go solve it with your $20 gift cards. Instead of saying the restaurant industry is full of workers, they deserve the same protections we give to banks so that they don't fail. And hey, the government should do something about that. And I'm going to raise hell about that with elected people until they do. It was just one of those things that I am always so annoyed by, which is, you know, giving us these little piecemeal solutions to really big, complex problems. I'm as ready to eat out as anybody is. I've actually been out now twice, by the way, since I've been vaccinated. I've been out twice.
Excellent. How was it?
Yep. It was very exciting. I do, however, want people to ratchet down their expectations. COVID's now been going on for a little over a year. Restaurants ain't ready. They ain't ready. No. I hate to tell you. They forgot how the whole situation works. I went to one place and I was just talking to the chef behind the thing. And I was like, yeah, just give me what you got. You know, because he just, his kitchen's a little discombobulated. They forgot how to order enough food. He was like, I'm out of scallops. It was a bit of a mess. Having said that, it was nice to sit down and eat food.
Yes, I went out to a restaurant in Los Angeles with my best friend, and we went to Charcoal in Venice. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I will say the day we went, Charcoal was ready. They were ready. Mm-hmm. Everything was in stock. It was so great to have someone bring food that I did not have to prepare. And then I tipped extravagantly simply because I could just tell these people needed the work. Like they were... I felt bad all along. Like so many people underpaid and underemployed for more than a year. People in theater, people in the movie theater business, people in the restaurant business, anything customer facing. And so it was great to be able to just feel like, okay, I'm participating in my local economy.
Yeah.
And the meal was really, really lovely. And it was nice. And I'm definitely looking forward to doing it again. And then I cooked a beautiful meal the other day because we had Jackie Woodson and her wife over for dinner, as well as Min Jin Lee, who was going to come with her partner, but he couldn't make it at the last minute. And we ended up having a lovely, lovely dinner party. And it felt so good to entertain again. And we were all vaccinated and past the 2-week mark. So it was safe. And to just hang out and drink wine and laugh. And I made two different kinds of lasagnas. And
I was going to say, tell us all about it. I saw some of the pictures, but tell us what you made.
So I made a meat lasagna. And that is decadent and beautiful. And then I made a mushroom lasagna because Jackie's partner, Juliet, is a vegetarian. And Debbie made the salad, and Debbie makes incredible garlic bread.
Mm-hmm.
I also baked a chocolate chip cookie dough cake with a mascarpone buttercream frosting.
That sounds like it'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll go happy, but that does sound like it will kill you.
And the next day, Jackie had to drop something off here, and I gave her another piece.
Nice.
I like to give people a little to-go box.
Yes. You had the comeback set up.
Mm-hmm. It was lovely.
Now, you cooked a lot during the pandemic.
I did.
I less so. I cooked more than normal, but I mean,
I've seen your Instagram. with like little soups and
I'm very stripped down grilled items. Yeah, one of the things I did during COVID is I significantly cut back on red meat, animal proteins, red meat and chicken and pork, right? And so one of my challenges during COVID was learning some new ways to prepare seafood. Very stripped down. I toyed and played around with plant-based recipes, did a lot of vegan stuff to go with the fish. And then once I get really, really hungry, I put on a big pot of beans. So I'm in this sort of cycle where like for 4 or 5 days, I'm like, yes, I've got my sable fish recipes down. I'm gonna make a light chimichurri. Curry for it. Da, da, da. And then by Thursday, girl, I'm hungry and I have a loaf of bread and a pot of beans.
I hear you. I try to start every week out with the grand ambition of I'm going to plan all our meals this week. It's going to be great. I'm going to repurpose this, repurpose that. But, you know,
girl,
I also have a day job and, you know,
listen,
a bitch be tired by Thursday. Shit.
Thank you. By the time I do all of that work of like making decisions, that's the day too. Thursday is when it starts to fall apart. It's when my house starts to fall apart. Sunday through Wednesday, I'm running the dishwasher before I go to bed. I make up my bed in the morning. Girl, by Thursday, I'm just standing there in sweatpants and there are dishes piled up on the kitchen tabletop and I'm just eating like hummus with a spoon. So if I don't have it together by Thursday, my whole life really falls apart. Like you said, a bitch got a job.
Yep.
Girl, we got a lot of jobs.
The other day, Debbie and I finally sat down and had a serious conversation about, given how incredibly full our schedules are, we probably need help on the domestic front because we can't, I mean, we just simply cannot do it all. And it's okay to admit, especially when you have the resources to address the problem ethically, like by paying someone what they deserve and so on. And we're going to seek out, I should say, a little more domestic support because, man.
Girl, it can't be done.
It cannot. And I just,
it really
I have
can't.
Nothing but respect for people of any gender who go out and work a job and sometimes have to bring that job home and then also hold it down on the home front with cooking and cleaning and the raising of children or taking care of
parents. I was about to say, at the very least, I always say to people when they ask me, you know, how do you do all this? How are you so productive? I've told you my feminist response is to always tell the truth.
Amen.
I am productive because I do not have children in my home.
Yes.
There is absolutely, positively no way I could have the career that I have in the United States of America if I also had children. Now, if I were in Europe and I had European benefits, I could maybe make it work. But you just can't do it in the United States. So I'd like to say to people and be really honest about that. Holding it down at home is not only a full-time job. It was never meant to be an individual's job. Like it takes an entire team of people. And food is one of those that feels like the easiest one to outsource, but it's also tends to be one of the more enjoyable domestic tasks. So I go back and forth on how much I want to outsource that because I go through these seasons, right, where I want to do the cooking. I want to think about meals because it can be so much fun. But then, like we said, Thursday rolls around and you've had a hell of a week. And that's when I start scrambling around looking for stuff. That's when cookbooks are helpful.
Yes, it is. And I have to tell you, I have been enjoying some very good cookbooks lately. One of my favorite new cookbooks is Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. This is a cookbook by the amazing cookbook author, Julia Tertian. In 2017, Julia published Feed the Resistance, Recipes and Ideas for Getting Involved. She now has Simply Julia out, and it's all about making beautiful, healthy, comfort food. And what's really particularly great about this book is that healthy is not about size or weight. It's truly about food that is going to nourish you and not make you feel terrible afterwards.
Yeah.
She also has a podcast, of course. It's called Keep Calm and Cook with Julia Tertian. And so it was really wonderful to have a conversation with her. Julia Tertian, welcome to Here to Slay. It is such a pleasure to have you here.
I don't know what to say. Thank you so much.
I'm a fan of your food. I've eaten it prepared by you. Yes, flex.
Oh, that is exciting. Yes. What did you have?
Oh, roast chicken and this salad.
No, tell us about it. Like, so we had eaten it.
Okay. There was this glorious roast chicken.
Okay.
And it had a lot of herbs and seasoning.
I love herby chicken.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a salad, and I love salad. There was, I think, potatoes. All I remember thinking was, I'm in heaven, and this is delicious. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful food. Now you have a new cookbook called Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. And I must say, having made a couple of the recipes, the food is quite beautiful and a little healthy and delicious.
Can I tell you my version of that dinner?
Yes.
Yes, please. Absolutely. Yes.
I have like remade that dinner in my head so many times because I feel like so many things went wrong.
No way. Are you serious?
Yeah. And I just like want to cook this dinner for you all over again. But I'm so glad you remembered it. Well,
I mean, I volunteer as tribute, but after you left.
Let's pretend it went terrible. And Roxanne, you need to do a retake.
Seriously, after you left, Debbie and I were like, we need to have them over again.
I mean, this is great. Anytime. Anytime.
Have you been able to do anything remotely like a small dinner party, a self-sustaining, edifying thing recently?
I am planning on one tonight. Nice. My parents are coming to our house. Our meaning my wife, Grace, and I. They are, mm-hmm. they're on their way after this podcast. They have not been inside our house in over a year. We've had some backyard stuff, but mm-hmm. everyone is fully vaccinated and they're sleeping over and I'm making dinner and I am so excited. I'm so excited.
That is thrilling.
So, so exciting. The fully vaccinated life is a good one. We are fully vaccinated, as are my parents. And we've actually have been bubbling with my parents since December. Mm-hmm. It's been lovely after almost a year of not seeing them mm-hmm. to then have them with us was really fulfilling. So mm-hmm. I hope that you guys have a really lovely evening.
Thank you. I'm going to pretend like you're telling me this and I've heard it for the first time, but I'm a longtime listener of the show. So I know your parents have been with you. I'm so glad they're with you.
That's right. That our mother's ready to expand the guest house. Listen, we're all caught up.
You're
right?
A real one then. You are a real yeah. one.
Julia, may yes. I ask, what are you preparing for dinner?
Oh, sure. You totally may ask. I am going to make, I feel like a broken record. I'm going to make a roast chicken.
Uh-huh.
We have a collection of various potatoes in our house. We have some little potatoes. We have some random sweet potatoes. So I'm going to cut them all up, put mm-hmm. them in the dish with the chicken. I think I'm going to roast it low and slow. Like,
yeah.
I'll start it this afternoon and we'll eat it for dinner. Caesar salad, because it's one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. And when I make the dressing, I call it Julius Caesar, and it makes me laugh every time.
I see what you did there. I do.
I know.
And I think I'm also going to make a cobbler. So I did a cobbler recipe in this new cookbook called
cobbler.
Any Frozen Fruit Cobbler, because you can use any frozen fruit. And I'm a big believer in frozen fruit mm-hmm. because it's so good and it's already like cleaned and washed and ready
and
to go.
And life is hard enough.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So I had this really amazing social media moment because the like Oregon Board of Frozen Berries or something saw that I've been on my soapbox about frozen fruit and they sent me mm-hmm. like a few pounds of blackberries.
As one does.
So I think I'm going to make like a blackberry cobbler.
Can I just say that I am on the record as being pro cake?
Oh.
In the cake versus pie wars.
Yes.
The cobbler, however, is for me the compromise. Mm-hmm. As a Southerner, I feel like a cobbler is its own distinct mm-hmm. genre. I don't think of it as pie. I know lots of pie people think of it as a version of the pie. I'm like, no, if you have to include cobbler, you are already conceding that pie is inferior. I'm very much in favor of the cobbler. And I am so excited to hear about that as if I'm having some myself.
You know, Julia, you have a new cookbook. And one of the interesting things about the cookbook is that you call it recipes for healthy comfort food. You know, I know that there's a lot of value judgment that we place on food as healthy or unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. And clean.
Oh, don't get me started about fucking food.
I
what the fuck are you talking about? I think it's the most evil term to be introduced. Like, are you not washing your shit? Like,
exactly.
That sounds like a Caucasian problem to me. And I know that you've written recently about your changing relationship to your body and to your food. And so I would love for you to tell us about that journey to get to a place where you could write this cookbook full of just truly beautiful food.
I would love to tell you that. And I have to just admit, it's very surreal to answer this question coming from you, Roxanne, and talking to the both of you together, because both of you, your work has been a huge part of how I think I've come to understand this sort of shift. So I'll back up and just say that I totally grew up in diet culture. I didn't know that not losing weight was like a goal that one could have, or the absence of a goal. Mm-hmm. And my household, we were a dieting household, like full of Snackwells cookies, Boca Burgers, all this stuff.
Right.
My parents both worked in publishing. They worked in the magazine industry. So I also grew up in a house where my parents were making the images and headlines of things that I was, you know, comparing myself to. Mm-hmm. We were all comparing ourselves to. And basically, I just assumed that the meaning of healthy meant skinny. And because that's what I saw, and I never questioned it. And I wasn't around anyone who questioned it. And I have had this lifelong love of cooking since I was a little kid. Like, before I can remember, the only place I want to be is the kitchen. And the kitchen is where I feel most connected, where I feel most curious, where I feel most joyful, where I feel most confident. Not that I think everything's going to turn out well, like the dinner I made for Roxanne and Debbie, but I trust myself in the kitchen. Like, this confidence isn't that I think it's all going to be great. I just feel like I can figure it out.
You can handle it. That's exactly the thing. That's exactly real confidence. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky that I've had that my whole life. And at the same time, I have not had the same joy and confidence when it comes to eating and just being in my body. It's been very fraught for me. I've felt things like guilt and shame and, you know, the list goes on of those kinds of adjectives. And basically, this all kind of came to this boiling point, no pun intended. It started when I met my wife, Grace, because mm-hmm. Grace got into a relationship with me, someone who hated her body. And that was hard for us, for her, for me. And Grace had worked through a lot of stuff, which is her story to tell, of getting kind of to another side or the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And I think being around me was really triggering for her. And so we as a couple just kind of started talking about that. And in these conversations, I had this huge realization. I had limited myself to two feelings in my entire life, and I realized I had only ever felt happy or fat.
Oh.
Little did I know that fat wasn't even a feeling.
I was about to say, that's not even a feeling.
Exactly.
And how much, though, do I also both love and also feel like pangs of recognition mm-hmm. and how it took someone else loving you for you to consider how you were loving yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I have to say, I've been dealing with that a mm-hmm. lot lately, because after 2 years of very rapid weight loss because of weight loss surgery, I have mm-hmm. plateaued mm-hmm. in a very frustrating way. It's part mm-hmm. of the process. I'm going to get past it, but I'm struggling with the plateau mm-hmm. and the pressure of being publicly fat and the expectation that I should be walking around in a size 6. Mm-hmm. Also living with someone who has a reasonably good relationship mm-hmm. with her body. I mean, she's a woman who grew up in this world, so there are some issues, mm-hmm. but she loves me and my body no matter what, whether it was 2 years ago or today or wherever it goes from here. And we've been having some really intense conversations because she's like, why are you dieting? Mm-hmm. Who are you doing this for? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you realize you don't have to do this? Because certainly don't do it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've really had to, you know, as much as I think I'm progressive, like, I've really had to realize, like, I genuinely think that I need to, like, punish myself until I get to, like, the whatever magical right size. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to break that programming. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, I don't know that I've broken it. I just, mm-hmm. I feel like I've turned the light on and now I can't unsee all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think Grace did for me what it sounds like Debbie did for you. And from a distance, what's been honestly mm-hmm. just so beautiful to watch in your relationship. And it makes me so grateful that I can identify with this. You know, Grace invited me to look at myself through her eyes. Like mm-hmm. that is an act mm-hmm. of love and generosity. And mm-hmm. it's something that I wish I didn't have to do to see myself in this way. Like, I wish I could just get there on my own. Mm-hmm. But it's been really helpful.
Yeah. But that's the thing. You don't get there on your own. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you don't get out of it on your own.
Exactly.
Right. You got there by seeing yourself through the eyes of others.
Well said. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's only fair that love would pull you back out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Totally.
And it's interesting. We actually hear a lot of rhetoric about how you have to love yourself before someone else can love you, et cetera. You know, listen, I've been loved plenty of times without loving myself. It's fun. But sometimes it is necessary to see yourself through someone else's eyes. Like it did, like when Debbie says that, then I pause and think, oh, because it took me a long, long time. And I'm still working on it to like genuinely believe that she actually likes me, not just tolerates me, but likes me as I am and is attracted to me as I am. It's just so hard to believe, I think, for people who grow up in this world that gives women so many messages. What are you trying to do now that you are on this sort of shaky new ground of seeing yourself through Grace's eyes?
What am I trying to do, personally or professionally?
Yeah. I think both, because I don't, you know, I think especially when it comes to food for someone who is a professional cook, I don't know, can you separate those things?
I mean, that's like the eternal question. I have a very blurry line between my work life and personal life.
Welcome to the party. Yeah.
But I would say what I'm trying to do personally is be incredibly honest with myself and apply the same compassion to myself that I try to apply to the people in my life who I love very much. I'm working with an amazing therapist. I've worked with so many different types of therapists. I could talk all day about different types of therapy. And I'm now working with a therapist who like specializes in body justice. That's like what it says on her website. And that has been awesome. I will shout her out here. Her name is Carmen Cool. We meet on Zoom.
Thanks for doing that. Yeah.
That is a great, thank you.
She's great.
Because people are always looking, finding therapists who are fluent in the language of different kinds of bodies, different kinds of lives, a justice orientation, and is good, and you can access them online. Like, that's just such a gift. So thanks for that.
Yeah, of course. And I found her, I will say, through Dr. Lindo Bacon, who wrote Radical Belonging and Health at Every Size and these books.
Dr. Bacon, they came up to me at an event, introduced themselves. I looked at them and I thought, you're skinny.
Not what you were expecting.
And I had to confront some issues there because I thought, how can I take you seriously about Healthy at Every Size when you're that size?
Yeah.
But then I started to look into their work and it's been an interesting journey.
I will also just say, because cookbook author recipes like love tangible takeaways, like if Carmen is booked, the Intuitive Eating website, I believe, has a list
of
counselors who are like certified in it. And the Health at Every Size website has a registry of counselors who work through a Health at Every Size lens. So these are just really helpful resources. I think it's a really interesting thing that I guess leads me into like, what am I trying to do professionally, attempting to do? Because I think so much of the discourse around fatness is spoken by really thin people. And I think that speaking to fat people and just listening to fat people is really important. And I honestly don't know if I'm fat. I've thought I was. I know I'm not in a very fat body, but it just feels really valuable to me to contribute what I can, which is I know how to make cookbooks. So if I can make a cookbook that's healthy food that has nothing to do with weight loss, that feels valuable. I think cookbooks are really interesting. And I think they have a lot of power to sway culture in a way that's very underestimated because
how so?
They're welcomed into people's homes like no other type of media.
Okay.
They're seen as so friendly, so warm. You know, my cookbooks are totally like queer propaganda. But like, there's not a pride flag on the cover. Like, this book is so much about like anti-diet culture, but it's not like an academic text. And all of these things are important, like so important. But I just feel like when this stuff is coming from everywhere, like just as you were saying, like when all these people and voices contribute to it, like you need a lot of people and voices to get out of it. Like,
that's right.
We have to respond from everywhere. So like I try to use my cookbooks as like Trojan horses for this kind of stuff. But also like here's some really easy, simple recipes, like have fun. Like it's not all serious. And it's nice to mix in, I think, fun and pleasure with a really serious conversation. Like it makes it more... This is so corny, but it's like, it makes it more digestible, right?
I see what you did there.
I see. I do.
You were talking about, you were so rudely interrupted by me. You were talking about having like two emotions that you could label happy and fat at some point, right? And I know I've read in something, I think another interview you did, I could not believe you said this because this is a thing I actually seriously recommend to adults that I thought I was the only one. You talk about trying to label your emotions mm-hmm. better. Mm-hmm. And said, so you got one of those charts that they yeah. put in kindergarten classrooms, yep. which I love those charts. I'm not even, and that is not hyperbole. So like for the people who don't have kids or maybe mm-hmm. haven't been to a classroom recently, there are these wonderful charts that they some teachers put in their classrooms. And the children, when they're about to have a meltdown or, you know, is not in good sorts, as my grandfather would say, the teacher will say, point to your feelings. Mm-hmm. And it has a visual representation of different feelings. Like, are you sad? Are you lonely? Are you right? All these other things. And you said you use it to help you label and process your emotions. Where did you get this idea from? Because I thought I'd made it up. I just want you to know. I thought I created that.
Do you have one of the posters?
I have a digital one up on my, because we're virtual right now in our classroom at the university. But I do have a digital one. Really? Okay. Yeah.
So mine, I use it to this day because, again, I'm not an expert on any of this. I'm not through it. I'm not on the other side. Mm-hmm. I'm just like very willing to be very honest. Mm. So it's on my wall. It's right behind me.
Yeah.
This is something I look at constantly because I imagine the two of you being, you know, writers, scholars, the people that you are, you might relate to this, that I tend to live very much in my head and I don't always feel super connected to my body.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah. So often I feel like, I know I don't feel good, but I don't know what I feel. And go and I stand in front of this poster and I look and I try and figure out what I actually feel. And for so long, I had used the word fat, this simple, short word. I had used that word to describe so many things and anything other than happy. I didn't even know happy and fat could exist at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sad. And this really, I cannot give enough thanks to my wife, Grace, because she basically was the person in my life when I said, "Ugh, I feel so fat." She said, "Can you tell me what you actually feel?" Mm. I never had that before.
Go, Grace.
Yeah. Oh, no, Grace.
What a great question.
Yeah.
That is a great question.
Yeah.
I am actually going to ask myself that next time.
What do you actually feel right now?
So like in 10 minutes.
No, and it's really, I'd be so curious to know, you know, you don't have to tell me, but like, I'm not trying to stop the thought. That's going to be, I think, impossible for me, at least at this point. And then I feel like a failure if I have the thought, and I'm sick of feeling like a failure. I'm just sick of it. So I just try to get curious about it. And it's like, so what am I actually feeling? Yeah. So I stand in front of the poster and I'm learning. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how often I realized when I started reflecting on my feelings? Also, same experience of being extremely disassociated from my body, really probably my whole life. Like every woman, especially every Black woman, every woman of color, whatever. I mean, it's just a series of traumas. You know, our life is defined by these. And at some point, I just stopped feeling anything.
Yeah.
And part of my journey of reparenting myself over the last couple of years, which is what I call it, which is, you know, give myself the parenting that, I mean, I think would have been good for me to have had as a young person, has been learning to better identify my feelings. So I so deeply relate to that. And the feeling that I realized I did not have a word for, that I thought, well, but that it became my personality. I didn't have a label for it, but it was clearly my personality. I am just so often bored. I'm not interested in that thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in what's happening to me. I'm not interested in what's being put upon me. And I didn't have a single feeling for that. So I intuited that as I have a problem, right? I haven't made this work. And it became this constant need, a desire to make everything work all the time for everybody, even if it was beyond my control. Right. To take care of everybody else's emotions. And as it turned out, once I honored like my own interests and what my boredom really was about, was that I'd been pretending to be someone I wasn't. Yeah. I was sharing everybody else's interests because that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to reflect back at you what makes you feel good. And so I didn't do anything that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I hadn't developed any of my own interest. And the one thing I could agree with other people about was eating. So we'll eat.
Speaking of eating, I would love to know about how you developed these recipes. I made the French onion meatloaf.
French onion meatloaf. Let me see.
It was really lovely. And all of the recipes, there's always like a little surprise in them. And so I would love to know how you came up with these recipes while thinking about trying to reorient that relationship with your body.
Sure. that is truly the ugliest thing in the book. Like, there's not a picture of it. Like, it's
amazing. Yeah, I noticed there wasn't a picture of it. I was like, huh.
I mean,
what is this about? I'm looking at this. This isn't, I mean, it looks like meatloaf, to be fair.
I mean, it's just, you know, ground meat. I use turkey, use whatever you want. And it's got caramelized onions. And I tell you the truth about how long that takes, but you can do other things
yes,
while you do that.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
That was my favorite part of the recipe. You are the first cook, chef person who has ever told the truth about how long it takes to caramelize some goddamn onions.
Mm-hmm.
And you deserve an Oscar and a James Beard Award for that.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I mean, I'll take it, but also, to me, this is actually, I mean, this is funny and it's making me laugh, but it's also like, this is what this book is. I'm just trying to be honest. I'm trying to just tell you what it is. But yeah, this recipe is so simple. And then it's got some cheese in it. And then you take out this brown meatloaf with like bubbling cheese. Like it, the first time I pulled it out of the oven, Grace was like, what is that? I was like, just wait. Like, you're going to like it. And it's an ode to my Aunt Debbie, who never cooked. She liked to say she made the most delicious reservations. But the one thing she ever made was meatloaf, and she would use a Lipton's onion soup pack.
That's what I mean, that was my first thought. I mean, are you kidding me? That's the secret ingredient of every Southern home cook is Lipton's onion soup.
But in terms of coming up with the recipes for this book, they're inspired mostly by two things. One is the cooking, just the everyday cooking that I do in our home for me and Grace. And Grace, you know, a few years ago as an adult was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And one thing that felt like a helpful thing I could do as her wife, what are the most comforting foods that Grace loves? What are the ones that make her feel most taken care of? And what are super low carb versions of these? Because at first, to take away a high amount of carbohydrates just took away one variable from something that has so many variables. And a lot of those recipes have just become things we eat all the time because they're just really delicious. They're really like, they're healthy comfort food. They're chicken cutlets that are just, it's not a fried chicken cutlet. It's something different. And it's just something really good and easy to make. And it's just, you put like a little mayonnaise and mustard on the chicken and then put almond flour and put them in the oven. So there's very little cleanup. You know, you put on a piece of foil, throw out the piece of foil. You don't have to wash a thing.
I cook on a foil all the time. Yeah.
Oh, I am. So I love to grill, and it's like the gayest part about me. And I'm always wrapping everything in foil and putting it on the grill. And every time I'm like, we're having tin foil for dinner. And I think it's like the funniest thing.
I love it.
I think it's
and
like
I get very
funniest.
Fancy about folding my tin foil packets. Like I just get really into the whole, it is pathetic. It is. It is.
Oh,
so you know, it could be sadder. You could be me doing a fancy fold of your aluminum foil packet before you put it.
I'm glad I'm not alone. But so recipes like that came from that time. And other than that, you know, there's 10 chapters in the book, and each chapter feels to me like my attempt to answer some of the questions I get asked most frequently. So there's a chapter of all chicken recipes that include those chicken cutlets, but there's also a chapter of like vegan one pot meals, and like those two can exist in the same book. There's a chapter of all salad dressing recipes, because sometimes like just having a jar of something delicious and easy and homemade to spruce up something you buy at the store feels like you're doing something, you know?
Yep.
I really appreciated that aspect of the cookbook, that you don't necessarily have to make a full meal from it. You can order in something and then zhuzh it up with a side dish or a sauce. I think the way most of us live, where some days, we're going to do the whole thing and cook on that. Yeah. And then other days it's like, hey, I cannot do it today.
Yeah. I can tell you that every beautiful picture of food that you see on social media or in a cookbook, there is a tower of dishes next to it. There's usually a group of people. There are 10 different napkins that were looked at to choose the one napkin that looks like it just fell, just like that, you know? And I guess it feels valuable to be honest, but it also feels like I'm at a point in my life where I don't see any other way. Like, I think for so long I was trying to prove something to a lot of people in my work and in my life, and I just feel tired of that. And I know if I feel tired of that, I can only imagine how a lot of other people feel. So,
So, Juliet, we have a question that we love to ask every guest. And
it's your turn.
How can we help you, meaning us, the show, our listeners, do you?
This is always just such a kind question. I've loved listening to how so many people have answered it, and I should have come like more prepared. I honestly didn't think I would get asked this question.
What?
Because I feel like you primarily ask the Black women on your show, and I feel like you've made such a generous exception for me, and I'm just here to would do whatever I can to support
no,
you.
No, we do it for all the women and the non-gender conforming people. Okay. We don't ask men. We would never ask a man.
Never.
Okay. He's got enough being done for him. But everybody else, yes.
I can fly my gay card.
That's right.
Okay, three quick things. If you are dealing with any kind of body image, disordered eating, any of those things that we've talked about, if they resonate and you're in the position to get support, like please do seek out someone who is trained to respond to this, because I think it will change your life. Two, please support your local independent bookstores. Makes a big difference.
That's right. Shout out.
And three, please support your local farmers and maybe even join a CSA if you haven't, because that gives them money up front and it will give you lots of fun things to make in your kitchen. And it's a win-win for everyone.
It's like a choose your own adventure, but with vegetables.
Yeah.
Well, and I will tell you this. I've never done a CSA box, and probably for that reason. It's too many choices for me. It introduces too many new choices. But I will this spring. In your honor, Julia, I will venture into my first CSA box.
Wow.
Okay. I'll check in with you and
okay. I'll let you know. And I'll tell you how this whole CSA box nonsense is working out.
If you need ideas for what to do with like Ken Kohlrabi, you know who to call.
I bet you've got some. Thank you so much, Julia, for being here with us, for being such a warm light and spirit. Thank you for being on Here to Slay.
Thank you so much for having me. This was just such a pleasure and honor.
You know, one of the things that I enjoyed so much about Julia is her commitment to being honest, even about the elements of her recipe building.
Yes.
So there is like a trust between, I think, cookbook readers and cookbook writers that like, if you say this recipe is easy, it should actually be easy. If you say sweat the onions for 10 minutes, that should actually give me what the desired effect is. And it's actually funny how often that isn't the case. So I just really wanted to shout out Julia for like the honesty and transparency that she brings to even the small details of her work.
I agree. It's so intimate what she brings to her recipes and just the ingredients that she uses and the flavors that she prioritizes in her cookery. I'm enjoying the cookbook. I hope that other people are drawn to these recipes as well, because the food tastes good. And I think that is so important. You know, we have so few pleasures, especially now. And to be able to make beautiful food and know that it's going to serve your body well, I think is twice the gift.
A really lovely gift. All right, y'all, that's our show for this week. Listen, thanks to Paula Pergier for shouting us out on Twitter. She said she heard me on the Ezra Klein Show. And then she said, y'all and your guests are also raising me over on Here to Slay. Raise them up the way you want them to go. Deep gratitude. Well, gratitude back at you, Paula. If you don't already, please follow us and tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what you'd like to talk about, who you'd like to hear from on Twitter and Instagram and Gmail at HEAR2Slay.
From Luminary, Here to Slay is executive produced by us, Roxanne Gay and Tressie McMillan Cottom. Our senior producer is Curtis Fox. Our producer is Catherine Fenelosa. Production support from Lauren Garcia and Caitlin Adams. Our interns are Allie McPherson and Isoke Samuel.